Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Hello and blessings to all. Welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by Starseed Gems, and they can be found on the web at starseedgems.com. Our guest tonight is Stuart Sharp, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number here is 888-627-6008. So, Bob, what's new and exciting?
Nothing much. I see there's a story on your desk, an article that was written, I think, last week or the week before. One of those things that leaves you scratching your head, a family was mourning the loss of someone and decided to release balloons at the cemetery.
Right. I think this is the Siebold family, which I think is interesting because isn't that the name of the family in the
Alice Siebold, who wrote the book.
The Lovely Bone.
Yeah.
So that's there's a little coincidence there. Anyway, they talk about their husband and father. It's a mother and daughter, and he became suddenly sick in September, and he was gone in May, the following May, and Father's Day was coming, and on Father's Day, they decided to release some balloons at the cemetery. So they went to the cemetery, they released balloons, and there was a handwritten note on the balloon that said, or on the bunch of balloons that said, they're asking the finder of the balloons to please contact them if they got it. And they expected this thing to take off and go really far away, and somebody would contact them, and that was their intent. And as it went up, it got caught in some wires, and the mom right away started to pray silently to herself, you know, don't disappoint this little girl, just get those balloons out and release them and get them going. And with that, the balloons released and went off into the air. And they left the cemetery, heading home and stopping to do a few errands. And oddly enough, once they got home, which was 25 miles away from the cemetery, there was this balloon or this bunch of balloons, I'm not sure what it was, caught on their own fence.
Right.
With the note on.
The message, yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty, statistically improbable, you know, 25 miles, you know, so... that could be that those balloons were guided. What do you think?
I think so. I think it was one of those situations. You know, I'm a big believer, you're not, and I think that it was one of those situations where they really put their heart and soul into that intention, into that prayer, that they needed some sort of confirmation that he was okay. And it was Father's Day, and it was just a very, very difficult day for them. They needed that. They needed
right.
that message, and they got it. And I think that that's great. To me, that those kinds of things mean 10,000 times more than like going to a medium after medium after medium after medium and just hearing the same stuff over and over again.
Well, it's personal, you know. But
it literally, when you have these experiences, it literally does something to you inside that lets you know it's real. It's not, some people say, the hair on the back of their neck stood up. A lot of people say they get goosebumps. I think all those things are related to that inner knowing, that inner sudden inner knowing that the message is real. It's for them.
Let's just back up a second.
Okay.
You preface that by saying, you know, I'm a believer and you're not. Why do you say that?
Because you question everything.
Well, I question things, but I still... I'm convinced, you know, that there's an afterlife. I've seen too much, you know, to argue, you know, against it.
Right. You believe in an afterlife, but you don't believe in this whole communication thing? I mean, I see a lot of times you're shaking your head back and forth.
Yeah, well, listen, it becomes...
I mean, I agree with you. There are some stories like this one where the guy puts on the police officer who's supposed to be wearing a bulletproof vest goes into a bad neighborhood, stops two people, and they open fire on him, and he's thanking God because he put on his bulletproof vest. Well, you're supposed to be wearing your bulletproof vest. So, you know...
Yeah, well, you know, that's kind of after the fact. I mean, he didn't hear a voice or see a vision or have a thought implanted in his head that said, put on your vest. You know, he just, right. After the fact, a lot of people, you know, when they escape a perilous situation, often say, oh, I must have been saved by a deity or by the divine or, you know.
Right. A must have is different than, oh, I absolutely was guided by, you know.
Right.
We still have free will. We still can do things or not do things. And the outcome will be the outcome from our free will choices.
Yeah. Well, on that subject, how do we know when the thoughts are our own versus a thought that was given to us or transferred to us or implanted to us, you know, by another entity, whether that entity is alive or discarnate? You know, I mean, is there any way of distinguishing?
I think only people who can move their own ego out of the way can distinguish what's theirs and what's not. If you are, you know, centered around yourself and taking credit for every single thing that you do, there's no way you'll be able to tell the difference if it comes from one place or another. But I think it's interesting if you talk to, like, creative people who write music or who do art, they will often credit a muse or some other form of the creativity coming to them.
Yeah, and very often there's good reason for it. I mean, they describe, having, you know, a vision or being... specifically told, and not necessarily verbally, you know, how to do things. But I often wonder if there's a way that we can train ourselves, and maybe that's by similar to what you said, just by looking within and being still and separating yourself from what's, you know, what the all the extraneous bull that's going on.
And it's hard in this world. It's really, really hard. You really have to. And I know I say it for political and health reasons, don't watch TV, but you really do have to stop getting sucked in by the media. It's the media that affects our brains, our minds, our emotions, everything, particularly if you're going to, you know, the concept, read the morning paper. Oh, no, don't do that. Then it just sets your tone for the rest of the day.
Yeah.
Why do you want to do that?
I was just smiling because I remember, like, if you would have said to me 15 years ago that a particular thought that I had or a creative thought if you suggested the possibility that that thought was not my own, that it was somebody else's, I would have looked at you like, you're nuts, you know, what are you talking about? And that's the way a lot of people think today. I thought like that, you know, until you... you observe and you investigate,
right,
and you explore, and then you see the possibilities exist of thoughts not being your own.
And why not even consider, and I know this is going way out there, consider the possibility that that's the whole design of things, that when we are being led down a particular pathway towards a particular journey, that those thoughts that come into our mind are there for a reason, to
right.
guide us down a certain
and there, road. And there's nobody that will be able to expound upon that better than our guest that's coming up.
Ah.
So we're going to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to learn about the amazing journey of Stuart Sharp. So stay with us, and we'll be back in a few.
Starseed Gems Studios in Cocoa, Florida, fuses cremation ashes within art glass, making beautiful stones. The ashes are visible in the darkness and resemble a beautiful night sky. Starseed gems, developed by the parents of a young man who passed away, are set in hand-sculpted silver and gold settings. Prices start at $150. Visit www.starseedgems.com or call 321-632-7770. That's www.starseedgems.com. www.starseedgems.com or 321-632-7770.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
Hello, I am Lloyd Auerbach, parapsychologist and author. You can learn much more about life after death, precognition, mind-matter interactions, remote viewing, ghost hunting, and other psychic experiences and research through the acclaimed Distance Learning Parapsychological Studies program at HCH Institute. Our courses are audio-based with additional written and video material. Call HCH at 925-283-3941 or visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com. Our courses include The Search for Life After Death, Being Psychic, Psychokinesis and Precognition, Ghost Hunting, Theories and Models of Psychic Experience, and more. Taken singly or as part of the certificate program, these courses will enrich your knowledge of parapsychology and the range of psychic phenomena. You'll learn about being psychic yourself. Visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com or call 925-283-3941 for information about our individual distance learning courses and certificate program.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. After-death communication is an accepted occurrence in many cultures throughout the world. But for many others, proof of this phenomenon is essential. And research shows that contact helps move people through loss and grief. The Sign Registry allows people to register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to specific loved ones. Contact the Forever Family Foundation at foreverfamilyfoundation.org or go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
For those just tuning in, our guest tonight is Stuart Sharp. Our sponsor is Starseed Gems, and they can be found on the web at starseedgems.com. Bob?
And Stuart Sharp, frankly, has lived a life where he's been continuously guided by entities that most cannot see. With their assistance, he's achieved many things in his life that would appear to be impossible when we examine him in physical terms. You know, after the tragic death of his son, and subsequently seeing a vision of a symphony at the funeral, Stuart was guided through a journey that included becoming homeless and penniless and later learning to play the guitar, accumulating wealth, and eventually completing a journey by having his symphony played by the London Philharmonia Orchestra, which is quite amazing. You can learn a lot more about Stuart and all of his projects on the website, which is Angeli, ANGELI.TV. His book that we're going to be talking about is an anthology, and it's called The Snow People. Welcome to the show, Stuart, and thanks for joining us at this wee hour in the morning in the UK.
It's a great pleasure. It's 1 o'clock in the morning, but it's no
problem.
Yeah,
I know. I really appreciate you joining us. So take us back, a good place to start, to your early childhood. I mean, at what age did you become aware that maybe you were a little different than some of your friends, and that maybe there's an unseen world that remains part of our lives? I mean, was it early childhood?
Yes. I mean, we're going back 69 years now to when I was about 3 years of age. And it was one very snowy Christmas time in 1947, which was the worst winter UK had ever had. We had 25 feet snowdrifts around the house. But it was the best winter I'd ever had because I'd seen snow accumulate like an icing cake. And I just loved looking out of the window at it. And it was one night when I was looking out of the window, looking at this tremendous snow drifts. It was just wonderful. And as I turned round, I saw this vision of a young child and what seemed to be a young woman playing with my toys by the bed, and I was absolutely terrified. I was shaking with fear. I couldn't speak. And I had an old army blanket around my shoulders, and I covered my face up, hoping they'd go away. Mm. It was a big shock to me. But as I sort of thought, well, they're not seem to be doing anything, and maybe they'll go away by the time I pull the blanket down. But when I pulled my blanket down, they were still there. And then this conversation took place where this lady said she was his mother, and this was James, and he wanted to play with your little toy trains. And I started to feel, well, this is maybe it's a figment of my imagination, but I like it. And I played with him, and now it's like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and my parents could hear me talking to somebody, and my father came into the room and basically told me, oh, who are you talking to? You know, and of course, they disappeared. And it was from that moment on, I knew I was slightly different in a way, that I could see these, well, I'd call them my friends, but because it was the winter time and it was snow outside, I called them the snow people.
Right. And you know, so the reaction by your parents and friends was, you know, somewhat typical. Many people are just not open to the possibility that, you know, what you were saying could actually be true. So as I was reading your book, I was contemplating what part of your childhood was harder. Was it the financial hardships faced by your family, or the way you were summarily dismissed by your friends and teachers, or was it... I would think that the financial hardship and the troubled times that your family went through were not as troubling to you as not being believed by your own family.
Well, my mother was great. She was a very spiritual lady, so she sort of went along with it, you know. But my father hated it with a vengeance. And he didn't like to think that his son was going to be talking in these terms. So I never got on with my father at all. But my mother, she's my friend for life. However, the poverty-stricken nature of where we were, in retrospect, was so grave that we didn't have any running water in the winter because all the one tap we had was frozen. We couldn't get outside to get any food. It was a nightmare, I suppose, of giant proportions. And I didn't feel as if I was part of this family. And I used to sit on my bed at night asking whatever force it was, take me back. I don't want to be here any longer. You know, I don't belong here. Yeah. So even at that age, I felt there was something else going on. But as far as my father and most people were concerned, it was just a wild imagination.
Yeah. Now, Sarah and James, as your guides, as we'll call them, did they? I know that they appeared, especially when you needed them most, at various times throughout your life. Was it only by request, or was it when you thought of them, or did they appear only when you were desperate for information, or a combination of all?
It was a combination of them all, really, I suppose. And in the early days, I think they tried to look after me because I was a vulnerable little kid. And as I grew up and got stronger and was able to look after myself and I was on the right path, their visions became less and less and less. But there were some amazing incidents, as you probably read in the book, where they actually proved to my parents they were real. And I think it was when my parents really understood the power of what was going on that things started to change. But I had a terrible time at school. You know, I was vilified at school, I was beaten many times, bullied by the teachers, stabbed at school and nearly killed, had all sorts of trials and tribulations going on. It was a nightmare, really, growing up.
Yeah, and you mentioned the what I would consider to be a turning point when people, when your family were forced to take notice. Tell us about the time your family managed to take a little vacation to the beach and your mother lost something important to her. That's an amazing story.
It certainly is. It was a time when I was only 7 or 8, and it was the first time we'd gone on holiday to the coast, and it was just wonderful to hear the ocean in the background. It was sad that there was no sand. It was all pebbles, so myself and my sister were really a bit upset about that. But nevertheless, we went down to the beach, and I could swim anyway, and I was splashing around in the tide as it was coming in. And there were quite big rollers, actually. And I asked my mother to come and join us, and one of these big rollers, just like a tsunami, hit us. And we were both bowled over by this huge amount of water. And my mother sank beneath the waves, and she came out having lost her false teeth. And I was really shocked because I didn't even know she got false teeth. It was news to me.
Yeah.
You know, she kept it a big secret. And so, oh, my God, it was just a nightmare. So they were lost in the vast ocean. That was it. Finished. Gone. And she cried and cried and cried. And she said that she couldn't stay on holiday any longer. And she said to my father, "We've got to go home." So that evening, I was very disappointed we were going to go home. So that night, Sally and James appeared to me and said, "Don't worry about it. We'll find the teeth for you." And the next morning, I made every excuse under the sun to ask my parents, "Take me down to the beach for the last time. I just want to see the ocean for the last time before we go home." And they did that. And as I was walking along with them, with my sister, Sally and James said, "Okay, James will show you where the teeth are." And I followed James into the ocean very quickly. I had my trunks underneath my shorts, dashed to the ocean. My father was chasing me. I remember it very well. He was chasing me, you know, as I was rushing off into the ocean. And it was a very big swell. Oh. And I swam out to sea with this apparition of James in front of me. And he guided me well out to sea. And I dove down to the bottom of the ocean, and I found this conical shaped stone, and he pointed to that, "Lift that up," and I lifted it up, and there were my mother's teeth. And I getting back to the shore was difficult because the ocean swell was going one way, and it took me quite a long way out, and I eventually got back to shore and ran back to my parents holding my mother's teeth in my hand. Well, you can imagine the shock.
Of course.
Can you imagine the shock? And it's interesting because if anybody doesn't believe it, my mother's put a video of that account on my website. So she tells the story herself, and my sister saw it happen anyway.
Right.
And my father completely dismissed it. Completely. He didn't want to know about it. It was ridiculous. But my mother recognized then, wow, there's something special going on with Stuart now.
Yeah, it just shows you something as incredible as that, which is truly finding a needle in a haystack, and something that you were guided to. Some people just will never accept the evidence that's put before them. They're just too close-minded, and I think we find that all over society today. You know, just you got to open up a little crack, and hopefully with people like you and writing about these things, you'll open up the door for people to be open to that we're more than our physical bodies. So I wanted to get to what's so incredible about your life and story, and is the music. And you started to hear music in your head as a child, but at that time you didn't play an instrument, right?
No, not at all, no.
Right, and you didn't really know anybody that was musically inclined or played an instrument. So, how would that feel? Was it while you were dreaming or just in contemplation? How would the music appear to you?
Well, it was interesting because you sort of look back at things in retrospect, really. And when I was a kid, such was the trauma I was going through at school with all the terrible things that were happening to me. The bullying was unbelievable. I used to live within my mind because that was the only place I'd find any peace. And it was this night, I closed my eyes and I went into a kind of a meditation even as a kid. I just wanted Sally and James to come back and talk to me, but they didn't. But suddenly I heard this flash of this most beautiful, stunning, angelic music that really was so beautiful, I just wanted to live with it. And before I knew what had happened, it had gone. And the next morning, I thought, wow, that was so wonderful. What beautiful music that was. I'd never heard anything like it. And I got my friends, local friends, who were 7, 8, and whatever, around me, and I told them about this music. And I said, I want to create my first orchestra to play this music, which they all thought was rather funny. So my sister played a lemonade bottle. I played a reed flute from the river. Another friend played an aluminium kettle, and we sat in our backyard playing these instruments and making strange sounds. But I heard it as great angelic music. And my little friend opposite, who was 7, Celia, conducted the orchestra. Celia's a professor now. And somebody took a picture of that, which was amazing. I mean, I found the picture many, many years later to show people that that did actually happen. And that was the end of that. That was just one flash.
Right. And we fast forward, you know, to the tragic, you know, death of your son, and this amazing thing happened where this symphony appeared to you. Was it a full symphony that just blasted into your mind? Describe that.
Well, I mean, it started, you know, it's always interesting to me looking back. These things to me happened always when there was something dramatic or traumatic happening. It's as if the brain takes a shock for some reason and activates a kind of a tuning system. Maybe it's alpha or gamma rays. I don't know what happens with the brain, but I had a terrible shock of my son dying and my wife nearly dying at the same time. The trauma of it, of the death, was immense. It should never have happened, but it did, and it was a hospital error that made it all happen. Right. But it was very, very traumatic, and Ben's death was horrific, and my wife's death, almost death, was horrific as well. She survived by the skin of her teeth, spent 12 months in hospital. However, I had to do the funeral on my own because my wife was in hospital, and it was another snowy Christmas time where I was by now, had left school without any qualifications because I couldn't educate myself because I was being continually beaten at school, so I never really got any education. And this death happened, and it was out of the blue. And my brain had such a shock, I went into a kind of a trembling trauma. I was numb with fear. I didn't know what was going to happen. I got a daughter, Emma, and suddenly I was cooking for Christmas diners. Suddenly Ben was dead. My wife was nearly dead. And my daughter was waiting for her mother to come home. And Ben, it was just so dramatic and traumatic. I didn't know what to do. And on the night of Ben's funeral, I summoned up for Sally and James to appear. Please help me, you know. And what happened was that I went into a dream. And Sally and James said, go back to the graveside. Because where I had to bury Ben at the time, I wasn't happy about. Because they wanted to bury Ben in an unconsecrated area because there was no room, really, for this little soul. I was upset about that. In the dream, it was a dream, Sally and James took me back to the graveside and said, okay, here's a spade, dig Ben up, and you can put him in another area. So this is what I'm dreaming. And then suddenly a great vortex of light appeared from the grave. And I just saw Ben rise from the grave and up past my eyes into the heavens. It was beautiful in a way, because in the mortuary, I didn't have the courage to see him in the mortuary. I couldn't do it because the nurses were very strange. They said, "Do you want to see your son? He's beautiful." And I just couldn't. But in the dream, I could. And as he rose to the heavens, suddenly from the distant confines of my mind, I heard this angelic music and choir of angels start to come into my hearing area. And it grew and grew into this most magnificent symphony. And not only a symphony, but one of the angels came down and spoke to me face to face. And she sang a most beautiful song. And actually, for some strange reason, I became calmer. And the next morning, it was freezing cold in the pub. And I expected that dream to have disappeared. But it didn't. It came back to me and I remembered it all. And while I was cooking in the evening, I was looking into my steak griddle. And I could see the whole scene again in front of me. And I listened to the whole orchestral piece, note for note. And I could see every instrument. I could hear the whole choir. And I remembered the whole song. And that went on for many months. And I suddenly thought, wow. There's something going on here. And I eventually saw that as a sign that I have to go and do something about this.
And that is what I think is the most compelling thing about your life and this journey, was that you have this full symphony now given to you in your head, and I guess you'd call it an obsession, that you're now obsessed with giving up everything, you know, including your family, to see this symphony come into fruition. I mean, I guess as I was reading about your life, I would imagine that maybe the suffering and the hardship was part of the plan. Did you ever think that?
Yes, I did. Yeah. You're absolutely spot on. I did. I felt I had to go through some kind of a fire to be tested, to see whether I had the strength to do this. I really do believe that, and that's happened to me quite a few times. It's almost like you've got to go through different levels to get to the seventh level, the highest level. But I think I was being given a bit of a test here as to whether I would sacrifice my life to do this. In actual fact, in the beginning, I didn't want to do it. This phenomenal symphony and music and song was actually plaguing me. It wouldn't let go of me. It was almost like saying, if you don't go and record this, we, the force, will plague you until you do. You're not going to get away with it. No matter where you turn, no matter what you do, it's going to be there. So right. This was going on. Now, my wife, remember, was in hospital for 1 year, had three major operations. The first two didn't work, and there was a good chance she wasn't going to survive. So I was looking after my daughter. I was going to work every night, and I had this immense orchestra in front of me now. And also, one of the biggest problems I had was my alcohol addiction, put it like that, at the time. Being in a pub, it was freely available to me. Customers used to buy me double scotches every 2 minutes to get extra chips on their plates. That was going on all the time, and I didn't realize how much I relied on alcohol. So I drank even more alcohol to try and get rid of this obsessional video that was in my mind, because I knew that if I was going to follow this, it's going to cause great drama in my family. I knew I could feel it coming a mile off, you know. So what I did, I waited till my wife came out of hospital. By the time she got out of hospital, she still was very poorly, and I had to look after her for 6 months. And I thought, how on earth can I tell her I've got to go and follow this dream? But I eventually plucked up the courage to tell her. And, of course, instantly it was like, well, you know, she understood that the trauma I'd had had probably caused this, and all I needed really was some therapy. But eventually she saw my passion, almost desperation, to go and change my life. I saw it as the perfect storm. I didn't right. like being an alcoholic cook in a pub. My daughter was growing up, and I didn't really want her to see me like this anyway. So when this happened with Ben and the music and thinking back when I was 10, it was almost like a perfect storm to say, this is the time to change your life.
Right. And we're going to have to go to a break, but we're talking with Stuart Sharp. You should go on the website, and if you want to hear this amazing music that we're talking about, go to the website, Angeli, Angel with an I, ANGELI.TV. You also read more about the book, The Snow People. We're going to go to a short break. We come back, we're going to learn more about the amazing journey and life of Stuart Sharp, so stay with us.
Starseed Gems Studios in Cocoa, Florida fuses cremation ashes within art glass, making beautiful stones. The ashes are visible in the darkness and resemble a beautiful night sky. Starseed Gems, developed by the parents of a young man who passed away, are set in hand-sculpted silver and gold settings. Prices start at $150. Visit www.starseedgems.com or call 321-632-7770. That's www.starseedgems.com or 321-632-7770.
The American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena has always been international and concerned with more than just EVP. To better serve the public, the AAEVP is now Association Transcommunication, or ATRANSC. Their new website is atransc.org, and their motto is Objective Evidence of Survival. The directors believe people should know that death is not dying, and what we learn now applies to what we will learn hereafter.
Does consciousness survive death? Can technology be used to interact with the deceased? Can hearing from the dead heal the living? At the Windbridge Institute, we are working to answer these and similar questions. Through our studies with certified research mediums, we are examining psychic abilities and communication with the other side, offering insights into the limitless nature of consciousness and unlocking the possibilities of our bodies, minds, and spirits. Be a part of it. Become a Windbridge member today. Please visit www.windbridge.org to learn more.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you could find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com. I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
If you're just tuning in, our guest tonight is Stuart Sharp. Our sponsor is Starseed Gems, and they can be found on the web at starseedgems.com. Our Holiday Pass 2015 raffle is up on the website now, waiting for your name to be entered. So let me quickly explain how the raffle works and why you need to enter now, even though the drawing is not until December 23rd. Five winners each will receive a one-hour medium reading with Tracy Lee Nash, Doc Neil Zapowski, Nancy Marlowe, Dustin Livers, or Kathy Towle, and they are chosen from a computer program that selects five numbers randomly from a pool of consecutive numbers that were assigned to each entry. So enter often and have lots of different numbers. Our August webinar, Life After Grief, will be presented by grief recovery specialist and Forever Family Foundation certified medium, Doreen Malloy. Find the registration link on our events page. Forever Family Foundation certified medium Lee Ashley presents Visitations and Validations, an evening of spirit communication on September 15th in Austin, Texas. Kim Russo is taking time off from her busy filming schedule of her two shows, The Haunting of and Psychic Intervention, on October 24th for a celestial evening of spirit communication at Long Island University, CW Post Campus in Brookfield, New York. Get your seats online on our website while you can. She will be joined by medium Joe Peretta. December is not far away, and we have two annual Holidays Past events scheduled, Joanne Gerber in Natick, Massachusetts, and Joe Scheel and Janet Nohavik team up in Pompton Lakes, New Jersey. Both events are on December 12th. And finally, please, please, please help us keep all of our programs going by visiting our website and clicking on the donation button. It's on every page. Because of the work we do not receive the grants and funding that other traditional not-for-profits enjoy. And speaking of donations, please, when you go to Amazon, use the link on the Forever Family Foundation website to go and do your Amazon shopping. Amazon will make a donation to us. And if you're not shopping on Amazon, sign up with iGive.com. And when you shop on the Internet, donations will also be made to Forever Family Foundation as long as you name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice at iGive.com. And lastly, if you are a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us via email at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. Back to you, Bob.
And we're back with Stuart Sharp. If you'd like to follow along or see what we're talking about, go onto the website, Angeli, ANGELI.TV. You learn about this incredible life, this guided life of Stuart Sharp, and also will see his book, The Snow People, which is an anthology, which includes a wonderful story. It reads like a novel, even though it's a true story, and poetry and music. So it's a wonderful compilation. Stuart, before we went to break, we were talking about this obsession that you just had to, one way or another, get this symphony produced. So here you are in London. You really are there with no money. I think at one point you're living in your car and then in the streets. What next? I mean, how do you go from there to having the Philharmonia play this glorious symphony?
Well, let me make it clear before we go on, in case people think I just up stakes and left my family. That didn't happen
right at
all, anything like that, because that's really important to get this point across. Because eventually I did discuss it with my wife, and she realized that, you know, Stuart wanted to change his life, wanted to do something. So she, after being, you know, sort of totally shocked and dismayed at my notion of going to London, she agreed to give me a chance to get it out of my system, if you like.
Right.
And go away, succeed, or come back in 6 months. But I did make sure I left her with a good support system. My mother was fully behind me to do this. So she was there to help Joe, and her mother was there. So she had a big support system while I was away to try and do this. So I didn't leave her in the lurch at all. Could never do that. That would have been impossible.
No. And I know every time you got a dollar in your pocket, you sent most of that away, back to them, right?
Yeah, I mean, my biggest problem, I got this thing to do. The only thing I got in those days was a rusting old car, a squash bag, and no money, and nowhere to go, and no idea of where I was going to go. That was how I started. So I just drove to London because a voice in my head had previously said, if you want to do this, no, not that, if you want to do this, go to London and do this. it was very clear. It was booming in my head, and that's why I went to London. Right. Drove there, pitched up in a car park on one November's miserable November day in between two garbage bins, and sat there waiting for the next sign, which never came, by the way.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, Sally and James will turn up and sort me out. No, that didn't happen either. So this is another test of whether I've got the strength of character myself anyway without any sort of help from the outside. So I saw this as another test. And within a couple of months of wandering around, I was near a squash club, and it was a massive squash club. And I managed to get in and do some squash coaching. I was a bit of a squash coach. And I did it for £1 an hour to get a few pounds or a few dollars, if you like, to send home. And waiting for the sign, nothing happened. The car tax ran out. I had to sell the car for a couple of $100, sent that money home, and now I'm walking the street. I found a hostel for the homeless that took me in eventually, and I got a job there. So the 6 month is coming to an end, but the vision of it happening was even stronger. So I said to her, I need some more time, but by now she gave me another couple of months, but by then she was getting cold feet because nothing was happening. I didn't tell her I was living rough because I didn't want my daughter to know that was the situation. So I kept that to myself. I said, I've got some accommodation and I'm working at getting a job and, you know, things are going to happen. Well, of course, they never did. And eventually she confided in somebody else who was a very nice guy, and she eventually married him. That was a disaster for me, a total disaster, because I was under the naive impression that we would all stick together through all this, but that was too naive. And I felt like committing suicide, frankly. And I went to the River Thames by Big Ben, and I was so close to jumping off the bridge because I thought, well, I'm not required anymore. Nothing is happening. I'm on my own. I have no family. I have no job. That's it. And I was so close to the edge. And it was only because as I was about to jump over, I saw my daughter's eyes in front of me, and I couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it. It was impossible. I could not do it. And so I drew back from that and waited until something happened, and then something did happen.
And?
I thought I lost you there for a minute. Yeah. Something told me, it's one of these things again, go and sit opposite the BBC studios in Wood Lane, the iconic BBC TV studios. And
right.
You will see people coming in out of there that are really the greatest composers, the greatest entertainers in the world. Pick up the vibes from them. And I sat opposite there by a wall, and I was sending out the vibes to the BBC. In fact, I shouted out aloud to the BBC, one day you will play my music to the world.
Pretty
bold. And people heard me saying that, you know. And I think they thought, strange chap. And at that point, this gentleman walked by. He looked at me, and because I wasn't begging, I was just sitting there contemplating. And he came back and he said to me, look, he said, what on earth are you doing here? You know, blah, 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 blah. And I said, look, I've got this dream of an angelic symphony and I need to get it out of my head. And he took a shine to me. And his name was Anthony Wade, who turned out to be my good Samaritan and really my savior, without whom this would never have happened. And he's still my friend today. And funny enough, he's on holiday in America at the moment, and he's tuning into this program. So I don't know, he's got his friends listening in as well. So Anthony, thank you very much, my dear friend, for staying with me for 33 years, and long may we continue. But he took me back to his house, and he was a jazz pianist. And by then, I've actually convoluted the story. I'd bought a guitar by then for a few pounds. I'd studied classical guitar, and I was able to play him the themes of my music and the symphony on the guitar, which he picked up on the piano and started playing the piano version of it. Well, it just absolutely blew me away, and I knew this is what we got to do. And I thought, with his talent and knowledge, maybe we could just present it to the greatest orchestra in the world and they would just play it. That's how naive I was at the time. But Anthony said, no, it doesn't work like that. You're an unknown. No one's going to play your music in a million years. The only way you can do get that kind of an orchestra together, because it's not the orchestra that will cost you the money so much as all the preparation. You need orchestrators, arrangers, you need rehearsal studios, a rehearsal orchestra. You'll need the best studios in the world. You'll need post-production. You'll need choirs. It just went on forever. So he said, I suggest you go out now into the world and make yourself £1 million, and then you might have a chance of hiring all these people.
Did we lose you?
Hello?
Hello. Yeah, we're here. I thought we lost you for a minute.
So where did I catch up with you?
You eventually, you know, decided to earn the money that was needed to fund the project. And, you know, going through, I know from reading the book, you know, real estate and all sorts of different endeavors with the, you know, being driven with the one goal in mind. It wasn't the money per se. The money was a means to the end. And somehow you managed to accumulate enough wealth to pour into this, to the symphony. I forgive me for summarizing, because we're reaching the end of the program. But the way that I must tell you, Stuart, when I read about the great composers, you know, in history, whether it be, you know, Brahms or Wagner and, you know, Beethoven, they all described you know, some sort of divine inspiration, you know, in their work. And the way I interpret this, I know you had your guides, but it's quite possible the great composers got together and presented this symphony to you.
It wouldn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only way I could think of it, because it yeah. really is incredible. We have been talking with Stuart Sharp. If you want to read a true story that reads like a novel, I mean, there's intrigue, there's inspiration, there's great joy, there's great sorrow, there's great accomplishment, and it gives you insight into our relationship with the universe. Pick up the book. It's The Snow People. It's an e-book. You can download it. It's a great read. It's an anthology. Visit the website, Angeli, Angeli.tv. Stuart has put up some wonderful clips of the journey. We just touched the surface. There's so much more, a lot of philanthropy in Africa, helping the blind and disabled. And, you know, we just will have to invite Stuart back to get more information. But, Stuart, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate you joining us this wee hour in the morning. And we anxiously look forward to your future endeavors.
It's a great pleasure, Bob. Look forward to speaking to you again.
Thank you, Stuart. Be well.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon Donald Peterson, Judy Pernick, Donna Mello, David Mello, Kimberly Saavedra, Rachel Scandarian, Jeanette Davies, Marianne Pierzga, Julie Beischel, Ann Hutchinson, David Hayes, Rita Springer, Vicki, Steffi Jean Lash, Tracy Lee Nash, Eddie Roll, Tom Donahue, Tim Donahue, Matt Mello, Pat Drance, Barry Whitehouse, Ala, Andrea, Richard, Brian, Karen, Henry Stark, Johnny Jackson, Andy O'Brien, Tanya Cash, Stanley Mulan, Glenna Irwin, Lynn Austin, Michael Tim, Patty Potter, Eileen Lapata, Wendy Lippo, Doug Berry, Philip McPhee, Erica Betty Kovach, Denise, K. Karen, and Joanne Gerber. Now let us as one consciousness give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.